Bye, Teddy.
So today, as preliminary teaching to, before the Kala Chakra initiation, the Great Kala Chakra initiation, I do the introduction to Buddhism. The texts that we are going to go through are Master Nagarjuna's Ratnavali, the precious garland, and Shrulekha, a letter to a friend. So with regard to the Ratnavali, the precious garland, its commentarial transmission, I received it from Segun Tsenshab Rinpoche, from whom I received actually the explanatory transmission of all the six treatises of logic by Master Nagarjuna. And then the other, the Mula Madhyamaka Karika, I received the transmission from Kunalama Tenzin Gyaltsen. And also this, the letter to a friend, I received this transmission from Kunalama Tenzin Gyaltsen himself. And so I have received the transmission of both these texts that I'm going to teach. So whenever we do a Dharma discourse like this, in the beginning we say the prayer of which is a praise to the Buddha, which is common to both Pali and Sanskrit traditions. And the prayer goes, to the teachers, the four destroyer, thus going fully and perfect enlightened, awakened to Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, going to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings, beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, four destroyer, glorious, victorious one, Shakyamuni Guru, I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. So this prayer is said three times. We are going to through the second recitation of the same prayer. To the teacher, Arahat, Tathagat, Samyak Sambuddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, Supreme One, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, Arahat, glorious, victorious one, Shakyamuni to you, I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Shaya Tobala Chata Locha Doja Zuchi. Please tune your radio into 89 for English. When you, chief of the bipeds, were born, you took seven steps on this great earth and said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at the time, I pay homage. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom, like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the three worlds, supreme protector to you, I pay homage. Endowed with the supreme marks, a face like a stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The three worlds are not like you, who is free from dust. Matchless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I pay homage. Protector, endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, filled of ocean-like merits and good qualities, to the dust gone I pay homage. Through purity, freedom from attachment, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil gone dreams, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace I pay homage. From freedom, teaching the path, well abiding in the pure trainings, holy fields, endowed with good qualities. To the Sangha also I pay homage. Do not commit any unvirtuous actions. Accumulate a wealth of virtue. Subdue your mind thoroughly. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusion, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning, and clouds. Look, see all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained this state of all knowing, and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate my creators from the ocean of existence, stirred by the waves of aging, sickness, and death. Let's say this Heart Sutra. Arya Bhagavati Prajaparamita Hridaya Sudram. I pay homage to the three exalted jewels, thus have I heard at one time. The Blessed One was dwelling in the Vulture's Peak at Rajgriha together with a great assembly of monks and great assembly of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Blessed One was absorbed in the concentration that examines all phenomena called profound illumination. Also at that time, the exalted one, powerful Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of Mahasattva, was contemplating the meaning of the profound, perfect kind of wisdom, and so that those five aggregates also are empty of inherent existence. Then through the power of the Buddha, the living Venerable Shariputra asked this to the exalted, powerful Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva: how should a child of good lineage who wishes to engage in the profound examination of the perfection of wisdom train himself or herself? Thus he spoke, and the exalted, powerful Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, replied to the Venerable Shariputra: any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to engage in the profound analysis of the perfection of wisdom should look correctly like this. Look correctly at those five aggregates as also empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, and emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feelings, discrimination, compositional factors, consciousness are empty, Shariputra. In that way, all phenomena are empty, without characteristic, unborn, unceasing, not stained, not separated, and from stains, and not decreasing, not filled. Not fulfilled. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no composition, no effect, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no form, no sound, no smell, no taste, no object of touch, no phenomenon. There is no eye element up to, and no mental element, as well as no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no cessation of ignorance up to, no cessation of old age and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, no cause, no origin, no cessation, no path, no wisdom, no attainment, no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, because bodhisattvas have no attainments, they rely on and abide in the perfection of wisdom. And since their minds have no obscuration, they have no fear. Having well transcended all wrong views, they reach the sorrowless state. All the Buddhas, abiding in the three times by relying on the perfection of wisdom, have fully actualized the highest, perfect, complete, enlightened state. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the great knowledge, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassable mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra thoroughly pacifying all suffering, because it is not deceptive, it is alone as the truth. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is broken. Shariputra, in that way, a bodhisattva mahasattva should practice a profound perfection of wisdom. Then the conqueror beyond, gone beyond, arose from that concentration and praised the exalted, powerful Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva mahasattva. Well done, well done. Son of the lineage, it is like that. It is son of good lineage. It is exactly like that. Thus, the profound perfection of wisdom should be practiced, just as you have explained. And all those thus gone, have the will or rejoice when the conqueror gone. When the conqueror gone beyond had spoken thus, Saradatiputra, the exalted, powerful Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, and all those surrounding, as well as the worldly beings, gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas, also rejoiced and praised the words of the conqueror.
Hagi.
This is the verse of salutation from Abhisamaya Alamkara, saluting the wisdom mother of the Shravakas, Pratyeka Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and Buddhas. And then the verses of salutation from Nagarjuna's Mula Madhyamaka Karika, the fundamental treatise of the middle way called Wisdom.
Sobe sangye manam ge tamba tela cha te lo.
Let's say the blessing for the tea.
Sambe gendu sami kyab sami.
The qualities of Buddha is inconceivable. The qualities of Dharma is conceivable. The Sangha is conceivable. And making offering to these three inconceivable ones, we have inconceivable merit. And I offer this tea to you, the three inconceivable. The 17 Nalanda master prays, illuminating the threefold faith and invocation of the 17 great sagely adepts of glorious Nalanda. I will read the text and then give short comments, introduction to these masters. So at the end of the book, actually, in the colophon, which I'll read first, it's on page 20. If you have the book, the blue book in Tibetan, which has the prayers and the Kala Chakra Succession Guru Yoga. The Tibetan text is on page 16. Concerning the teachings of the profound and the vast teachings given by the fully enlightened supramundane victor, the Buddha, the foremost sages of the holy land of India have, as mentioned above. So with regard to the Buddha himself, just as the sun makes the flower, the lotus bloom, the Buddha dispels the darkness of the ignorance of sentient beings with his teaching. And so the sun of the Buddha's teaching opens the intelligence or the wisdom of the disciples. And so without being overly attached to the teaching of the Buddha, saying that I'm a Buddhist, and therefore I hold the Buddha to be sacred. But what you need is an unbiased, skeptical mind and do analysis of the teaching of the Buddha. And the Buddha himself has said so. He said, O monks and scholars, just as the gold is tested by rubbing, cutting, and burning, likewise you should examine my teaching and then accept it, not because you have devotion to me. And so the Buddha doesn't say that we should actually keep faith in him and accept whatever he has taught. And so what he has said is that the teaching that he has given must be analyzed through the four different principles or reasonings, the natural, the functionality, principle of functionality or functions, and ultimately by using the argumentation, the reasoning, using the arguments, and also using the principle of relation. And so one must use arguments, logic, to check the teaching of the Buddha. For example, the Master Nagarjuna and his disciples themselves have actually, when they examined the teaching of the Buddha himself, they have said that such and such teachings cannot be taken literally because they go against reason. Because the reason undermines those teachings if you take them literally, and therefore they have said that these such and such teachings cannot be taken as literal, but these are interpretable teachings. Whereas certain other teachings, they have said, however much you examine the teaching through logic and reasoning, you gain more and more certainty about them, And when you actually apply those teachings within yourself, you can actually make transformation within yourself. And therefore, first by reasoning and examining the teaching, and then experimenting the teaching, which gives when through these means, when you gain certainty, then if you take such teachings as definitive, then you can actually do so. You can take these literally. So amongst all the different teachers of the world that have come in the world, who have been really helpful, beneficial to millions and millions of beings in the past and in the present also, they are doing so, and in the future they will do so. Who will do so? All these religious traditions must be respected. So amongst all these different founding teachers of the different religious traditions, the teaching of the Buddha is something which we must actually examine through logic and reasoning. And therefore, I say here, the teachings are profound and vast, given by the fully enlightened Buddha. The former sages of the Holy Land of India have, as mentioned above, composed numerous excellent, meaningful texts that can open the eyes of those possessing the fine discriminative awareness. During this time, more than 2,500 years have passed, but still, those teachings dealing with hearing, contemplation, and meditation survive undiminished. Therefore, I recollect the kindness of those who were the ocean of sages and the cream of sages and aspire to follow them with unflinching faith. And so, in the Nalanda tradition, which follows reason and logic to test the teaching of the Buddha himself, we are talking about them. And so, these masters are actually showing us the path. And then, at the present time, or today, when the ordinary world there, in the ordinary world, there is great advancement in the fields of science and technology, but we are also distracted by the hustle and bustle of our busy lives. It is extremely important that those of us who follow the Buddha should have faith based on knowledge of his teaching. So today, the world, in the world, there is great advancement in science and technology, and also doing scientific investigation through tools and instruments is greatly advanced, and then people are able to come to conclusions about different things. Amongst the Buddhists, for example, there are people who are carried away by the hustle and bustles of the modernity. Just as Jeter Milarepa has said, there are people who appear to be religious but are not. So why this happens is because of the lack of knowledge of the view, conduct, and meditation. And if you have the understanding of the view, conduct, and the meditation of the Buddha's teaching, then you will not admire all these attractive things that are around you, which cause you distraction. And therefore, many of us, mostly from the one corner of our mind, we admire the material progress and admire them. Therefore, even amongst the monks or nuns, there are very few who are actually who have found faith in the Buddha's teaching and Buddha through knowledge and reason. So, of course, when it comes to our day-to-day life, we are talking about being practical. And similarly, it is the case with the teaching of the Buddha. So if even if you may talk about being practical, but if you are not really being practical yourself, then you are actually deceiving other people and yourself. And therefore, it is very important to have knowledge and based on reason to have faith in the Buddha. So in order for that to happen, therefore, we should examine the reasons for it with an unbiased and inquisitive, unbiased. In the 400 verses of Aryadeva, it says a student must be unbiased, intelligent, and someone who is an aspirant of the path. If you are not unbiased, if you are not impartial, then you would be you would have attachment to your teachings, and you will actually hate or reject the other teachings of the other traditions, and you will not show respect. So you will not be able to see even the good qualities in those other traditions as well. And therefore, it is important to be unbiased and inquisitive mind or skeptical mind. So when you want to do some analysis or investigation of the teaching, you have to be skeptical. Without that, you will not check the teaching. And therefore, you must be skeptical and not just take for granted. And so we are talking about in the mental processes, we talk about the diluted doubt. But that kind of doubt that is taught in the mental factors is diluted. But here, the skeptical mind is not that kind of mind. And then analyzing them closely. If we are to develop a faith supported by an understanding of the reasons, so when you see that certain teachings are without any contradiction, I mean with reason, that they can stand up to the test of reason, then you will be able to see the unique teaching of the Buddha. And so the Buddha's teaching is based on the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, and so you see the noble truth of suffering, and its cause is the origin of suffering, which is the fundamental, the ignorance, and which sees things opposite of the reality, and therefore this ignorance, which can be overcome by seeing the factors which can actually counter it, like the selflessness, understanding of selflessness. So when you see the possibility of the ignorance being, the possibility that ignorance can be overcome and eliminated from your mind, and that also that you can actually develop it within yourself, then you will be able to see the quality of the teaching, the Dharma itself, which is the path to, which comprise the path to liberation, the three trainings. So the main one is the wisdom, training of wisdom, and which is supported by the training of concentration, and which is also in turn founded on the morality. And these excellent texts concerning the profound and vast teachings by such renowned masters among the six ornaments and two supremes as Buddha Palita and Aryadeva, Arya Vimukti Sena are indispensable. With this in mind, I have had a new Sangha composed depicting the 17 sagely adepts of Nalanda. This collection is achieved by adding 9 teachers to the existing way one depicting the 6 ornaments and 2 supreme ones. And therefore, seeing these reasons, I wrote this praise of the 17 Nalanda masters. So I would like to also wish to make some clarification here. The Tibetan Buddhism, the Buddhism that is spread in Tibet is called by some as Lamaism. These people have actually said that this is not pure, authentic teaching of the Buddha that had come from India, that originated with the Buddha in India. And then, in many of the Buddhist countries, the Buddhism of Tibet, because of the prevalence of Tantra in Tantra, where people have actually misused the teaching and misbehaved accordingly, and therefore these people from the other Buddhist countries have said that Tibetan Buddhism is not true Buddhism. In one of the World Parliament of Religions convened in Melbourne, perhaps, I was there at this conference. I met, there were two Burmese monks, very good monks, and they wanted to see me. And so when I saw them, they told me that we have a big difference. Although we are, of course, in general, we are the same follower of the same teacher. And so I immediately got the impression that they were thinking that the Tibetans do not have the Vinaya practice, the monastic discipline, but only they were thinking of the tantric practice. So I said, our practice is founded on the Vinaya practice. We are following the Mula Sarvastivada tradition, I told them, which was established in Tibet by Chandrakshita, the Upadhyaya of the monastic ordination in Tibet. And this particular tradition of Vinaya came down from the Buddha to the Rahula, the son of the Buddha, and then it came down to Nagarjuna, and then Master Chandrakshita also followed the same lineage, and so he established it in Tibet. And so we are following this Mula Sarvastivada tradition of Vinaya. And then in the 11th century, George Dipankara Srijana, George Adisha, came to Tibet, and he was following the Mahasanghika tradition of Vinaya. And there were some Tibetans who requested him to give the ordination. And Adisha told them that the Mahasanghika Vinaya lineage is more lenient compared to the Mula Sarvastivada tradition. And so when Adisha came to Tibet, Mula Sarvastivada lineage was already established in Tibet, and therefore Adisha said he will not spread his lineage of Mahasanghika Vinaya lineage. And therefore, the Pratimoksha that we follow is in Sanskrit. The Pratimoksha of the Mula Sarvastivada tradition that we follow was in Sanskrit. And so, within this lineage, we have the four defeats and the 13 remainders and so forth. In the Pali tradition, the four defeats, 13 remainders, and then misdeeds, regarding the misdeeds, the second, there are 71 or something in the Pali tradition. Which refer to, in the Mula Sarvastivada tradition, the way the monks should wear their lower robe, shamthap. There are seven different features mentioned, whereas in the Pali tradition, it just says the lower garment, the skirt, should be worn properly. There's only one precept mentioned, so it's not major difference. And so I actually related these to the two Burmese monks, and telling them that we have these practice of the Vinaya, and they were quite taken aback and asked me, oh, do you also have such practice? And so they already had this impression that Tibetan Buddhists do not have this kind of practice of Vinaya, the monastic celibacy practice. And so that the Buddhism in Tibet is not an authentic Buddhism. They have such an impression. And then with regard to Mahayana, when we use the term Mahayana, it also causes some disturbance or discomfort in the in those people of those countries. So we should not leave these just in name, Mahayana or whatever term we use. Of course, when we use terms, there is also a conception, a conceptual thought that follows it as well. And so what is actually a Buddhist Mahayana Buddhism? So masters like Nagarjuna and his disciples were the main upholders of the Mahayana tradition, of the Nalanda tradition. If you read these texts written by these masters, you will know what Mahayana Buddhism that was that spread in Nalanda was like. So it is a teaching where there is a practice, an external practice of the Vinaya, and then internally there is the Mahayana Bodhisattva practice, and then secretly there is the Tantric practice. So we study in when we study philosophy, we study the philosophical assertions of views of some Vaibhashikas, and then when we study logic and reasoning, like Pramanavartika, we study the philosophical views of Sotrantika philosophical tradition, and then we also study the Chittamatra tradition of philosophical view, and also the Madhyamaka view. So all these four different tenet systems are studied in our monastic institutions, and therefore the Buddhism spread in Tibet. Of course, we make this distinction between the greater and smaller vehicle on the basis of the practitioner's level of or broadness of the mind. And then we also studied the four different philosophical schools. And if you study these texts, you will know what Tibetan Buddhism is about. Otherwise, someone who is not so well learned, and when they write something, and then people read them, I mean, they think, they give the impression to the people that Tibetan Buddhism is Lamaism, and that it is mixed with the non-Buddhist Tantra. And therefore, it is very important for us to study the texts. The texts here, of course, we have the life stories of the great masters, but the most important text that we need to study to really be able to make distinction between what is the teaching of the Buddha, to be able to establish them through reason and so forth, we must study those classic texts written by the masters of Nalanda. And then when you understand that this Buddhism that we have has come through this authentic lineage of the Nalanda tradition, and then amongst the ourselves, the Tibetans, we talk about being Nyingmapas or Sakyapas or Kagyupas or Chonangpas or Gelugpas and so forth. And in the past, there were people who have said that, you know, if you are a Gelugpa and you cannot keep a Nyingma text in your house. And then there are some Nyingma practitioners who say that, oh, these texts that belong to the Gelug school, I mean, they actually smell of the new tradition. And so, and then the Gelugpas also have said that the Nyingma texts smell of something, I mean, there's a foul smell of being an old and so forth. So whichever Tibetan Buddhist tradition you are following, the Nyingma, Sakya, Gelug, Chonang, we all study the same texts that have come down from us to us from the Nalanda tradition, in the Nalanda tradition. Even in the Burnbo monasteries, they study the Uma text, the Madhyamaka text, and the logic and epistemological texts as well. And so, all of these texts written by the Nalanda masters are what we are studying. And then, particularly in the Nyingma text tradition, they study the 13 classic texts. we have the annotations to these 13 different texts by Kenpo Shenga. So when we say that we are not following the authentic Nalanda tradition, then all the Tibetan Buddhist traditions are and become one. Of course, when it comes to tantric practice, when in the Sakya tradition we have differences, of course, Sakyapas follow the path and the results and system, and then the Kagyupas practice Chakra Samvara, their female and male circles of teachings, and then in the Nyingma tradition, regarding the Nyingma tradition, then we have the what is known as the Gunjung Drenpe Thegpa, these different vehicles that the nine vehicles that they talk about. Of course, they are the teachings on the Four Noble Truths, and then the Bodhisattva teachings and so forth are same. And then in the Nyingma teaching, we talk about the distant lineage of God, the words of the Buddha, and then the near close lineage of the Dharmas or the revealed treasure teachings, and so the different Dertuns have revealed different teachings, such as the teaching circles from the Nyang and so forth. So all in since all these different traditions go back to the master Guru Padmasambhava, so Guru Rinpoche is related more with the Dharma teachings, and then the master Chandrakshita is more related with the Sutra teachings, and particularly within the Madhyamaka tradition, he followed the Yogacara Madhyamaka tradition. And then later, masters like Kunkin Longchen Rabjampa, who was one of the three emanations of Manjushri himself, and then so, because of age, perhaps, I'm not able to remember all the names of these masters. And so these masters explained the Madhyamaka tradition from the point of view of Prasangika Madhyamaka school. So if you go back to the root of all these traditions, we can see the difference between the Sakya, Kagyu, Nyingma, and Gelug and so forth are on the basis of, from the point of view of Tantra. But when it comes to the Sutra tradition, we see that all these traditions follow the same Nalanda tradition. So we all follow the same Nalanda tradition. When it comes to a particular practice, perhaps, within the Sakya, you have the Sakya, Ngorpa, and Tsarpa traditions. And then in the Kagyu, we have the four major and eight minor Kagyu traditions. And there are slight differences, perhaps, and therefore I find it quite significant to actually introduce the 17 Nalanda masters.
So if you have this book in Tibetan, please raise your hands. If you have the praise of the 17 Nalanda masters, please raise your hands. So please read through. So I will read through the text and give short comments as I go through, and you may also read through. The God of gods, arisen from the compassionate wish to benefit wandering beings, has attained transcendent protection, abandonment, realization, and liberate sentient beings through the teaching dependent arising. Through teaching dependent arising, I bow my head to you, O the conqueror, the sun amongst teachers. And so, the way I'm praising the Buddha here, or paying homage saying the compassionate one, wishing to benefit wandering beings. I'm actually thinking along the lines of Dignaga's praise to the Buddha, saying the Buddha is one who has become an authority. And also Master Nagarjuna also praises the Buddha for teaching dependent origination from his own experience. So likewise, I have praised the Buddha here accordingly. I call to mind esteemed Nagarjuna, who, as prophesied, introduced the Madhyamaka system, the excellent path, and who was skilled in clarifying the meaning of the suchness, free from extremes, the intention of the mother of conquerors through the profound logical presentation of dependent arising. And so, Master Nagarjuna was the one who actually was the master who commented on the explicit content of the teaching of the Prajaparamita, the perfect wisdom teachings, which is emptiness. And so, of course, all the masters or the followers of Madhyamaka and Chittamatra traditions followed these perfection of wisdom teachings. But with regards to using the reasoning of dependent origination to prove that things are absent of any inherent existence is the tradition of Madhyamaka, the Nagarjuna tradition. As I have already told you the other day, if you recite and think along these lines, which say in from Nagarjuna's text, which say whatever occurs through dependence is said to be empty, and so forth. These two verses, I mean, you'll see that the reasoning of dependent origination is the main reasoning to prove that things are empty. And then the third verse is the homage to Aryadeva, who was the chief disciple of Master Nagarjuna. And according to with regard to his writings, we have the 400 verses, and it is one of the three texts which we refer to as the fundamental treatise of the Middle Way, the Madhyamaka Avatara, and the 400 verses. And then next is Buddha Palita, who wrote a commentary on Mula Madhyamaka Karika, wrote this commentary which is named after himself, Buddha Palita commentary. So it's not, although it's not very extensive commentary, it's very profound one. And then next is Master Bhava Viveka. So he wrote the Madhyamaka, the essence or the heart of Madhyamaka and its commentary. So in his commentaries, he actually rejected the Yogacara view, philosophical view, saying that there's no external things. And then, so he refuted the extremes as truly existent and accepted the shared perception of valid cognizers and external objects. And so the Savatantrika Madhyamaka tradition founded by Acharya Bhava Viveka is called, in the Sakya tradition, it's called the lower Savatantrika Madhyamaka tradition. And then next is a praise to Master Chandrakirti. I call to mind Chandrakirti, who promulgated the complete path of the sutras and tantras, who was skilled in expounding the profound and vast middle way system. So we actually study the text written by him, which is Madhyamaka Avatara, or entering into the middle way, which we memorize
and also study the commentary to it word by word, and also do study them through critical analysis, where we actually go through the process of objecting to the opponent's views, and then establishing one's own views, and then refuting, or we also do the rebuttal of any arguments against or criticism against this our positions and assertions. And then, as there is a saying, there is a sun and the moon in the sky, which are brightly shining brightly, and there are two texts which are called clear texts in on the earth, which are the Duncel, the bright lamp, and also the Tzigsel, which is the clear word. And so these two texts were written by Master Chandrakirti, very profound and marvelous teachings, commentaries. And then next is, I call to mind Bodhisattva Chandrakshita, who was skilled in teaching the host of fortunate disciples the truly marvelous path of great compassion with the versatile means and reasons of the profound and the vast. So he wrote the Shiksha Samuchaya, the compendium of practices, and also Bodhisattva Charya Avatara, Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life. These two texts complement each other. What is not found extensively, covered extensively in one text, is covered extensively in the other. And so these two texts we study. So these are very important texts. I call to mind the great Abbot Chandrakshita, who introduced the middle way to suit the disciples' mental disposition, was well-versed in expounding the rationale of the middle way and a valid cognition, and disseminated the teaching of the conqueror in the land of snows. So for those who might be at risk of falling into some wrong views about the teaching of the Buddha, where he taught the what he taught in the Prajaparamita teachings, if they take it explicitly, that explicit content. And so Chandrakshita rejected that the mind or consciousness is devoid of any true existence, and while he also followed the Chittamatra, the view of saying that there is no external phenomena as well. And so he was one of the top scholars of Nalanda monastic institution at that time, and he was very old by the time he came to Tibet. And so the Tibetan king, Tisung Detsen, invited him to Tibet, and thinking that it would be very beneficial to for the spread of the Dharma in the land of snow, Chandrakshita accepted the invitation and came to Tibet, and he actually established the teachings of study of the scriptures, and then he also established the translation bureau in the Samye Monastery, and then also he established the monastic the department, where he gave the monastic ordination according to the Mula Sarvastivada tradition, and then also in the Samye Monastery, the meditation department was established, where there were Chinese monks doing single-pointed concentration practice, and they were focused on cultivating single-pointed concentration. And then the fourth department of tantric practitioners was also established, which could not have been done without the help of Guru Padmasambhava, and so it would have been very difficult for Master Chandrakshita and the Tibetan king to establish Buddhism firmly on the soil of Tibet without the help of Guru Padmasambhava. And therefore, Guru Padmasambhava, the Tibetan king Tisung Detsen and some ministers and other people in the inner circle, and to them, the master Guru Padmasambhava gave the tantric teachings secretly, and then this tantric department, the practitioners of tantric department was established. And so Chandrakshita worked mainly to establish the Dharma, and then Guru Padmasambhava supported the establishment of Buddhism on the Tibetan soil. And therefore, these three personalities, the king, Tisung Detsen, Guru Padmasambhava, and Master Chandrakshita are referred to by the Tibetans as Ken Lop Chö Sum. And then at the advice of Chandrakshita, Master Kamalashila also was invited to Tibet. I call to mind esteemed Kamalashila, who thoroughly explained how to meditate systematically in the middle way thought, free from extremes, and the union of meditative quiescence and special insight according to sutras and tantras, and flawlessly clarified the conqueror's doctrine in the land of snows. And so he wrote, Kamalashila wrote, Chandrakshita himself wrote the Madhyamaka Alankara, the ornament of the middle way, and also one of his main texts is on logic and epistemology is the Tatup Samgraha. So it deals with the different philosophical traditions and tradition of epistemology and logic that evolved after Master Dharmakirti had arguments and debates with the non-Buddhist practitioners. And Chandrakshita's text covers those which evolved later. And with regards to Kamalashila, he wrote a commentary to Tatup Samgraha by his master, Chandrakshita, which in Tibetan translation we have two volumes. And then some of the Hoshangs, the Chinese monks who were practicing their concentration in Tibet in those days, have said at some point that study and reflection of on the teachings of the Buddha is not necessary. Mere concentration, single-pointed meditation is important, and we have to focus on that. And so this tradition is still there in China and also in Japan. And recently when I was in Japan, one of the practitioners, I was asked by a Japanese practitioner, is it necessary to really study and to become a Buddha? Is it not sufficient? Just meditation meditation sufficient for one to become enlightened? So, in order to reach the goal, of course, we need to see, understand the teaching by studying them first, by hearing the teaching, and that is just superficial understanding. And then on whatever we have listened and heard or studied, what we should do is we should reflect on those teachings and do critical analysis through reason and logic, just as the scientists do to experiment and to research on certain thing. And so we also, with regard to the principle of functions and the functionality and the principle of relativity, even scientists use in their experiment and research. And then in quantum physics, they say that nothing exists objectively, which is very similar to what Buddhism says. And so many years ago, I met Indian physicist, quantum physicist, Rajaramanna, and he told me that this quantum physics is something new in the West in modern times. This concept is quite new, but in India, this concept had already existed since 2,000 years ago. So these principles of functionality, relativity, and so forth are very useful to do analysis into teaching of the Buddha. And so Kamalashila, after being invited to Tibet, one of his main tasks was to actually debate with those Chinese practitioners in the Samye Monastery who say that meditation alone is sufficient for enlightenment. And therefore, he wrote, at the request of the Tibetan king, the Stages of Meditation, Book 1, 2, and 3. So I received this transmission of this text from the Indian, from the Sakya abbot, Sangye Tenzin. He received this teaching in Samye Monastery from Kham, Dzogchen master from the Kham, who was giving teaching in Samye, sitting on the throne, on a throne which was said to be the throne from where Chandrakshita actually gave teachings. And so he didn't know the name of that Kampa Lama, but he received this transmission. And since he had received this transmission, I thought that it is indispensable for me to receive this transmission of the Stages of Meditation from him. So I received it. And therefore, I call to mind the esteemed Kamalashila. So up to this, we have covered the profound view lineage of the masters. And then next starts the next is Asanga. I call to mind esteemed Asanga, who Maitreya inspired and looked after, who was adept in disseminating all the Mahayana sets of discourses, who revealed the vast path and, as prophesied, blazed the trail of the mind-only system. So he was actually prophesied by the Buddha himself. So his his own philosophical view is in Madhyamaka, a Prasangika view, but he was responsible. He had the task, the noble task of establishing the Mandondi school. So we study the text written by him on the Mandondi school. Then I call to mind esteemed Acharya Vasubandhu, who by maintaining the doubly empty system of the seven treatises of Abhidharma, clarified the philosophical theories of Vaibhashikas, Sautantikas, and Vijnanavadas, the former sage renowned as the second omniscient one. I call to mind esteemed Dignaga. So we study Abhidharma Kosha Karika of Vasubandhu. And then Dignaga was a really great scholar, had the highest caliber of intelligence to examine the teaching of Buddha through reasoning. So he wrote the Brahmana Samuchaya, the compendium of valid cognition or knowledge. And then next is praise to Dharmakirti, the glorious master Dharmakirti. He was someone who excelled himself in logic and epistemology. He wrote seven texts, the three body-like texts, and then the three primary texts, and then four derivative texts on logic and epistemology, which are all there in Tibetan translation. The Pramanavartika is the longest text he wrote, and then the Pramana Naya Bindu is the second one, and then the Pramana Vinishchaya is the third one, as, which are like the body-like texts. So we can actually, as, by studying his text, we can see how to prove the Buddha to be an authoritative person, and also with regard to, how we can see that the understanding of emptiness can counter our ignorance about the true reality of things, we can resort to the text written by Master Nagarjuna and his disciples, the Madhyamaka texts. And then next is Vimuktisena, Arya Vimuktisena, who was the disciple of Master Vasubandhu, who excelled his own master in the study of Prajaparamita. And so Master Vasubandhu interpreted the perfection of wisdom teachings into the mind-only school system from the point of view of the mind-only school system, whereas he interpreted it otherwise, which is to say that he interpreted into from the point of view of the Madhyamakas. And next is Haribhadra. He wrote the Prajaparamita Aloka, and the lamp or light of the Prajaparamita, and also ornament for clear realization, and also the Sfutartha, the clear, the short commentary on the Abhisamaya Alankara. And then comes Gunaprabha, who wrote Vinaya Sutra, which actually summarizes the Vinaya principles that are contained in the Vinaya Sutras of the Buddha. So this is what we study to follow the Vinaya practice. And then comes Shakyaprabha, the ideal Vinaya holder. And then the Venerable Atisha, the 17th master, and from him came the three Kadampa lineages, the Kadam scholastic tradition, and Kadam Menga, the quintessential, and then the Kadam Lamrim tradition. So in order to understand the broad, the complete structure of the Buddha's teaching, we need to follow the scholastic tradition of Kadam. In the Sakya tradition, when they go through the teaching of Nangsum, the three perceptions of visions, they follow the same tradition as the Kadam. They follow the same the tradition as it is followed in the Lamrim. And the scholastic Kadam tradition actually follow the Nalanda tradition. When we actually have to follow the essence of the teaching of the Buddha as a whole, we need to follow it according to what is taught in Abhisamaya Alamkara, where it goes through the two truths, then four truths, and then the three jewels, and so forth, which are called the teachings, the topic on instructions. So, of course, it will come later. So the Kadam. So from Atisha came the three Kadam lineages. Then, making such invocations with an unflinching pure mind to these unexceedingly fine sages who are the ornaments of the world and the source of stupendous elegant teachings, may I be blessed that I may mature my mind stream and achieve liberation. And then, according to what is taught in Abhisamaya Alamkara, in the topic of on instructions, and following which I say here, I write here, may I be blessed to by understanding the meaning of the two truths, the way things exist, we ascertain through the four truths, how we arrive, how we enter and exit the cyclic existence engendered by the valid cognition of faith in the three refuges will be firm. And so with regard to the two truths, when we think about the dependent origination, of course we think about how things are relative. So we can understand with regard to the two truths, we can understand that the dependence in terms of how things are dependent originated in terms of causality, and on the basis of which we can understand how things are dependent in terms of how they are designated. And when you understand that, then you will be able to gain understanding into the true dharma, which comprise the true path and true cessation. And when we understand this, by understanding the nature of the teaching, we find faith in the Buddha, the teacher. And so we find understanding of the four truths. And our faith in the three refuges engendered by valid cognition will be firm. And so, of course, when we say Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, of course we can say the Buddha came in the past and he gave the teachings, and then following which there are the Sangha, the members who are following it. I mean, that doesn't have much weight. So in order to understand what Buddhahood means, we have to understand what are those negative factors that are eliminated to overcome, and what are the realizations the Buddha attains. And so on the we also need to understand the Buddha became an enlightened one by overcoming all these negativities, and that in turn happened because of his compassion towards sentient beings, and therefore compelled by compassion he became enlightened. So otherwise, we would just say, "Oh, the Buddha appeared in the past," and that doesn't have much weight. And so engendered by the may I be blessed to perfect an uncontrived awakening mind of Bodhicitta, which is rooted in renunciation, the aspiration for liberation, and the total purification of suffering and its source, and that boundless compassion that wishes to protect wandering beings. So in any tantric practice, we come across this mantra, Swabhava mantra. These two mantras, actually, Om Swabhava Shuddha Savadharma Swabhava Shuddha Ham and Om Shunyata Jnana Swabhava Shuddha Ham. So without understanding emptiness, which are referred by these mantras, I mean, we will not be able to understand what the emptiness means. And with the understanding of emptiness, without understanding of emptiness, you will not have the taste of the real teaching of the Buddha. And so with the understanding of it, then you will have the taste of the Buddha's teaching. So without understanding emptiness, how will you actually do tantric practice? The basic thing is, in tantric practice, you have to have arise into a deity, visualize yourself arising into a deity through the meditation on emptiness. So there's no other way than that. So as I have... So may I be blessed to be able to develop a quick and easy conviction about the profound paths of all the paths of perfection of wisdom and Vajrayana by listening to, contemplating, and meditating on the meaning of the commentaries of the great pioneers. So, Master Vasubandhu has said that to preserve and promote the teaching, the scriptural teachings, and the realizations of the teachings, we need to engage in study and practice. These are the only means by which we can preserve the teaching of the Buddha, through study and practice. In may I, in life after life,
obtained the good basis of human life, possessing the three precepts, and contribute to the doctrine as the great pioneers did, with respect to upholding and propagating the words and insights of the teaching through an explanation and practice. So we have really not followed the teaching very sincerely in with this kind of spirit. For understanding and the study and meditation of the teaching of the Buddha. May all religious assemblies be filled with noble sages and practitioners, passing their time in hearing, contemplation, and explanation, and having totally given up all wrong livelihood, may the ground of this earth, this world, be adorned in this way. By such power, may all the grounds of paths and sutras of tantra, be traversed, and by quickly achieving the state of omniscient conqueror, spontaneously fulfilling the two purposes, may I work for the sentient beings, as long as space remains. Now we'll have the launching of the new publication on Buddhist science. So the texts are written by the 17 Nalanda masters can be used like a key to open the words of the Buddha. And so if you understand the Abhisamaya Alamkara in the study of Prajaparamita, then when you read the Prajaparamita Sutras, they make sense, like the 8,000 verses of Prajaparamita Sutra, and then the 25,000 verses, and then the 100,000 verses. So Buddha's teaching is deals with the what is the ground reality of how things are. On the basis of that, then we can talk about, we can see how the principle of functionality works, and in terms of making transformation within our mind. And therefore, you can also have the principle of argumentation or evidence and logic. So there are, of course, in our Buddhist literature, we can find explanations about physics, physical reality. Whereas when it comes to psychology, it is not as, I mean, what we find in Buddhist literature is as, not as, I mean, it's very profound, and the what we find in science is not as profound as and deep and extensive as it is found in Buddhist literature. Whereas in terms of physical science, physics, it is found very extensively in great detail in modern science. Whereas when it comes to psychology, emotions, it is found very profoundly and vastly in the Buddhist literature. The Arahat Sagalha has said that a monastic should focus on study and reflection, meditation, and should not just be content with wearing the robes of monastics. And so, he says that through meditation and study, one should make transformation within, make this life a meaningful one, and a monastic should not just be satisfied with the robes. And so, within the teaching of the Buddha, there is an aspect which is about particularly the science of mind, psychology, which is very profound. So far, these teachings have rested on the altar. So I have, since many years, I have always thought that how good it would be if we could actually extract those teachings on Buddhist science and psychology that are contained in these scriptures.
So with regards to how to present these teachings, we have dealt with the ontological status of things. And then there is the subjective mind, which perceives these objects. How, when a mind perceives an object, how these distorted views and conceptions arise in us, and then from our own experience, how through logic we can actually prove that they are wrong, and then using inferential cognition, we can come to conclusion through inference, and then turning that into our own direct experience, and so seeing these making a transformation change within ourselves. Now, the method for seeing or perceiving these phenomena, of course, we have the consequential logic, reductio ad absurdum kind of logic, which are found in the text written by Dignaka and Dharmakirti and so forth. So they also use logic and reasoning that. And so, according to Buddhism, it is very important to overcome our wrong views, whether they are rarefied views or nihilistic views. And therefore, with the help of these geishas, who worked for many years and also consulted and had discussions with many scholars, and they compiled this book on Buddhist science, drawing material from the Kanjuran and Tenjura, and then these two volumes on Buddhist science are academic subjects, not religious. So the Kanjuran and Tenjura literature that we have contains science. One aspect of the teaching is science, and then there's a Buddhist philosophy.
Buddhist religion only for Buddhists. Science and the different sort of concept of philosophy is something academic subject. It can, you see, related with either relevant to I think seven billion human being. Mainly in this academic subject. So existing modern education very much sort of oriented about matter, material. So now many educationists now begin to feel existing education system is not adequate to build happy individual, happy family, happy society, happy humanity. So ancient Indian psychology is, I think, very, very relevant to today's world. So, I think we, as a chela of Indian guru, so we kept this knowledge intact. Guruji themselves now much neglected. So therefore, now we, as a sort of appreciation to our ancient Indian guru, all these 17 great masters. So now we compiled, you see, about psychology. We compiled this book. So I'm very, very happy. Now, last few years, our attempt now materialize. So I want to thank all our scholars. You really made immense sort of effort.
So
I can't lomang really
that much. He's only saying what he said in English, yes, in Tibetan.
Oh yeah. So, this book, right from the beginning, so our sort of motivation is This is not only for Buddhist, not only for Tibetan Buddhist. This is for humanity. So therefore, we already started English translation, Hindi translation, Chinese translation, then Korean translation, Mongolian translation, Russian translation, then Vietnamese translation or Japanese translation. Eventually, you see, some sort of group of people already sort of committed for translation like that. So, our foreign friends eventually, or of course, Spanish translation also will come. Portuguese translation, I don't know this moment. I didn't find, you see. And anyway, Spanish translation is quite okay. Like that. And then, of course, eventually German translation, French translation will come. Italian translation will come. So, Shazanga,
so His Holiness is saying this, whatever he said in English, in Tibetan again. So the English and Hindi translations may be finished this year, and then the Chinese translation may come later. People speaking other languages, of course, may be able to study, but first we whose language is Tibetan must study this text. Don't think that this is meant for the Westerners and foreigners and that we don't need to study. And you have to study them. The Muslims also should study this text. You should keep your faith in Allah. Single point of faith in Allah.
You're also a human being. You also find some disturbances from our emotion. So beside sort of appeal to Allah, it is useful to know more about the whole system of emotion. That can be helpful. So with our own knowledge, through effort, on top of that, blessing of Allah or Jesus Christ or like that can be helpful. Okay, so like that. So itself should consider academic subject, not a religious matter. Okay, thank you. So now finished. Thank you. That's a new Jayong.
See you tomorrow. In the afternoon, I have to come to the ritual, preparatory ritual for the cult initiations. So we'll start tomorrow at 8 o'clock.